The other thing could be because vampires don't have a blood system, they physically can't blush. So since he's half and half, maybe he was just curious.
No, yeah, we understood what you're trying to say in the beginning. Okay. You're just wrong.
Oh. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of I Finally Watched. I'm Alon.
And this is David, and today we finally watched Blade 2.
We did. We did finally watch Blade 2. We did Blade 1 a few months ago. A year ago? Something like that. It's been a while.
It might even be 2 or 3 years at this point, a few months ago.
Well, a year is a few months ago, depending on how you break it down. And we did it solo. But what I know was a few months ago, at the beginning of this year, is we had a special guest for Hellboy, Mr. Matthew Dawson. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure to be on the I Finally Watched podcast, the greatest podcast to ever guest on. And it's good to be here to talk about Blade 2, a movie that I finally watched as well. Had none of us seen this?
So I saw Blade when it came out, or around that time. I had the DVD, and I saw Blade Trinity. And I think I was always thrown off by like the weird-looking vampire alien things in Blade 2. They're just like, that's not what I want from a Blade movie. And Blade Trinity has none of that in it. It's like a completely, it's just like a back to basics type thing from what I remember.
I do want to clarify very quickly on exactly why we have Matthew for Blade 2, since we didn't have him for Blade 1, but we did have him for Hellboy, is that the similarity between Hellboy and Blade 2 is that they share a director. Mr. Guillermo del Toro.
I don't know why I've become the Guillermo del Toro guy of the I Finally Watch podcast.
That's because that's the way Alon's brain works. That's why that's happened.
I'm happy to take up the role because Guillermo's great.
I think we actually brought this up in the Hellboy episode though, because we were looking up what else he had done before Hellboy. I think we were trying to figure out if that was like his big break, and obviously he's done other things. But this came out, I think, 2 years before Hellboy. And it's kind of funny that there's like a lot of, you know, Ron Perlman. There's a lot of like the look and feel of it is very similar to Hellboy. So it is interesting seeing his kind of twist on it, because like look and feel wise, it's a completely different movie from the first one to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think I kind of was watching it and I described it in my mind kind of like it's a Blade movie. Second, in a Guillermo del Toro movie first, where it's you see a lot of the tropes that Guillermo put in his other films, but then it feels like the tropes of a Blade movie are stuck in there at certain places. I think the best representation of that is towards the end, where Whistler throws Blade his glasses and he catches them and he puts them on. I'm like, that's a Blade move, but you have to have that in a Blade movie. And Guillermo del Toro probably wouldn't have put that in there if it wasn't Blade. That's kind of like the strongest thing that I saw. I do want to also mention, Matthew, you said that this is not only your first time watching Blade 2, but all you watched Blade 1 in preparation for Blade 2.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys do like a greatest guest award on this show or anything, but I think I definitely deserve the nomination, the award, whatever, for this year, because first of all, I brought the Hellboy episode, which was great, and it was fun. I re-listened to it the other day, and I just died laughing again at Alon going like, I was a hell boy, now I'm a hell man. And then just like crying again. I hadn't seen Blade 1, so when you guys asked me to come back on again, I was like, all right, we'll do Blade. And you guys were like, well, we've already done Blade. It's like, what, we can do Blade 2? And I was like, oh, I haven't seen Blade 1. I can't just watch Blade 2. I gotta know what happens in Blade 1, which I'm so glad I did. Because if I hadn't watched Blade 1, this movie would have made sense. This movie counteracts a lot of Blade 1, which I was not ready for. I'm very mixed on this franchise as it's going. I have not watched Trinity yet. And I hear it's not good. So,
well, it wasn't directed by Guillermo del Toro, so we probably won't have you on for that episode.
Okay, yeah, I get it.
the funny thing is that I watched it with my wife and sister-in-laws, and they also never watched the first Blade. So they kept bugging me. They were like, do we have to watch the first Blade to understand Blade 2? And I was like, I don't think you do. And you really don't, because a lot of the portion of Blade 2 is flashbacks to like explaining Blade 1, especially about all the thing that happened to Whistler back then. Except for the fact of the suicide.
Makes no sense.
Because you assume that he offed himself in the end, but really, I guess he just fired the gun as Blade was walking away to fake his death.
What a pussy! He's like, I don't want to do it.
No explanation too about they show the flashback of him killing himself, but no explanation about why it didn't take.
Yeah, I was waiting for that flashback to keep going and like sort of reveal what happened, and then it doesn't do that.
it just shows exactly the same clip as it showed in Blade 1.
I kept waiting for it to cut to Whistler and have it like the gunshot goes, but a vampire's holding his hand and like pulled it away and they take him or something.
That would have been like, good.
That would have been cool. But it doesn't happen. So it's like, oh, I know it's confusing that Whistler died in the first one. That's it. Like, no explanation. No but it's just, very strange start to this movie.
And it's weird, too. So the same writer wrote Blade, Blade 2, and Blade Trinity, David S. Goyer, who also wrote Batman Begins, The Dark Knight.
David S. Goyer is a very famous comic book movie adaptation writer.
So my point is, I don't know what happened. If he was able to write this the way he wanted, and there's some funny, like, I don't think it's purposely Guillermo del Toro passing the buck, but he's like, I had nothing to do with writing this, just to let you guys know. And to me, the weakest part of this movie is the writing. Like, even if you leave out like the whole retconning Whistler's death, because you're like, oh, Chris Christopherson's going to come back. It feels like they never planned on sequels for this. And then when they're like, oh, let's do a sequel, they're like, well, fuck, we got to bring him back. And they could have. Yeah. They just decided not to explain it.
So they didn't have to bring him back. That's the thing, is that the movie would have been okay without him. And I think the reason
you even get like Norman Reedus's character filling in that role, and well, then they bring Whistler back, and there's like two of them.
So I think the point of Whistler is the betrayal of Norman Reedus's character, and then it's like, oh, then who does he have? Oh, don't worry, guys, he has Whistler still. But I think what would have been a much cooler, darker ending is that he has no one in the end, and it's just him. And then do whatever you want with Trinity. But like, it would have been way more impactful because he was making a love connection to that female vampire. He had Scud. He had Whistler. How cool would it have been at the end of it? He lost everyone. I think that would have been a much more powerful ending than like, oh yeah, I have my ragtime team behind me always.
Yeah.
Think killing off a few more characters wouldn't have saved this. One of the issues with the movie to me is that everything is so telegraphed. So like even from the start, we can start, but like we're in this Prague blood bank. You see this really fucking weird dude who's going in and they're like, do you have any tattoos, any piercings? And then they like strap him in. They're like, oh, we're going to drain you. And then he's crying and you're like, oh, this is immediately going to turn to laughter and he's going to fucking kill them all. And it's like, it's just that level of obvious for everything. So like in the middle of the movie, when the head vampire Damaskinos. Come up with a shorter name for that guy, first of all. That like that would be helpful.
His name is Dom, okay?
Anyway, when he's like, I have someone on the inside, I wrote immediately, I was like, they want us to think it's Whistler. It's very clearly Scud. Like, it's just so obvious. Like, and I mean, it's the movie's 20 years old, so it's like, I think a lot of older movies become obvious, you know, later on. But just like every single movie it was going to make, I was like, this is just so fucking obvious, like, what's going to happen here?
I actually missed the line where he said, I have someone on the inside. Or I heard it and I was like, oh, maybe to me it was so obviously Whistler that I was like, oh, but that... that doesn't matter, I guess. I brushed it off so you know, fast in my mind that it didn't occur to me that... So when Norman Reedus was like a thing, I was just like, oh, that's a cool twist. But I guess if I was paying more attention. The other thing about Whistler, since it's such a huge plot point, not just in the beginning of the movie, but the entire movie, is that they do these things where... like Matthew says, completely retcons everything. And one of those, the thing that I had the biggest problem with, but the fact that no one in the movie had a problem with it, except maybe it was mentioned once, I was like, maybe I shouldn't have a problem with this, is the thing he gives him to be like, to curb his blood, his thirst for blood for the rest of the movie. And I was just like, oh, that's an OP thing. That's like, I don't know the point of that. That takes care of all your problem. Why don't you just give that to all the vampires and they're okay, you know?
Yeah, I didn't even think about that because the serum is such like a huge thing in the first movie. Like, every 5 minutes they're like, he's got to have a serum guy. And then this one, they're just kind of like, nah, he doesn't really need it. You just get one shot and he's good the rest of the movie.
Well, I thought, and I can't remember one that well right now because like the point of one is not the plot for sure. I mean, there's the major plot point, but wasn't she trying to design something to get him to where he didn't need the woman that he saves? She was like trying to design something to where he would never need blood again. And I thought it was like a one-time deal, but I guess he has to keep taking the serum to like, I don't know, keep that up. I don't like the whole, like the fact that the thing worked on Whistler. I was like, I mean, when they brought him back, you know, he's just going to be back in the movie. So it's like, after that, I was just like, all right, well, whatever. as far as like what keeps him, you know, able to act like a human.
The other thing about him is when he goes on the roof to act as a sniper, and then Scuzz is being absolutely surrounded by vampire parasite things.
The Reapers.
It's funny, too, because if anyone here has watched The Walking Dead, we know that this isn't the first time Norman Reedus has gone against a group called the Reapers. totally typecast is what I'm beginning to think Norman Reedus is. But Whistler goes away for a while. He's like, I need help. And he's just nowhere to be seen. It's one of those things that I hate in movies where you do something with a character to throw suspicion on that character, but it's so obvious, like, there's no reason to be suspicious of that character.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I think, well, I would say it a different way because I had the same problem, but you have the character do something that's very suspicious with no reasonable, like, alternative for why he was doing it, right? There's, like, no reason Whistler left his post to follow this random Reaper. Unless he just, I mean, you could say he just doesn't like Scud, so he doesn't give a shit if Scud dies.
Which he was right.
I will say the thing that felt like undercooked was the whole Blade knew Scud was bad the whole time. Although I did read some stuff that I maybe would have caught on second watch where Blade tells Whistler, like, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. And I guess Scud is like right behind him.
They turn to him like this, like
because at the end Blade's like, yeah, I knew that they turned you, but I was like, it's a cool little scene, and we can talk about it more when it happened. But I wanted more in depth of like when they turned him, what happened, because it kind of doesn't explain like when he found him, was he good? Because like Blade did save his life.
That's true too, but he's like, I'm a familiar of the Dom guy, so he's gonna do whatever the Dom guy wants him to do.
But Blade did save his life. He has real wounds on his chest from where he's getting attacked. So if he was familiar of the biggest, baddest vampire in the world, they probably wouldn't have attacked him.
I guess that's true. But by the way that Blade saved him in the situation that he was in is exactly the kind of situation that in a vampire world, I like to also die in. Okay? So...
I don't think they actually fuck you while they're eating your neck a lot.
I don't know. I watched that first Blade movie. I don't know what was going on in that final scene, but something was going. And I'm very glad because I listened to the Blade episode you guys did right before this as well. And I'm very glad you guys were also creeped out by that mom and Blade scene. Yeah, very strange.
It's a little, very little odd.
In this movie... In an opposite fashion, not nearly horny enough. That's my notes.
Well, there's supposed to be, I read there's supposed to be a sex scene between Blade and Nyssa, which I think would have made sense. Because, like, they do well enough in establishing that they like each other. But it feels like, this is a 2-hour movie that feels like a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
Because of how long all the action scenes are. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Like I said earlier, Guillermo del Toro was like, I didn't want to interject on the script at all. I wanted to, you know, take their vision. I mean, there's some stuff you should have interjected on, I feel like.
Yeah, I didn't feel their chemistry at all in this. I kept thinking, like, are they trying to make this a romance? Like, what is going on?
They needed more.
I felt the attempt. I felt the attempt, and I kind of bought it. But I think you're right. You need that extra scene to kind of push it into, like, okay, that's what they're definitely doing. Speaking of feeling too coordinated, it's especially the beginning. All the fight scenes seemed way too choreographed. I'm going to put my sword up here and you're going to put your sword down here. And then I'm going to meet you down here. And then I'm going to flip you 5 times. And I just felt like maybe it was the wire work or the way they, I don't know, but it just felt too mechanical, and it didn't feel like an organic fight scene.
It felt like, and this is a lot of older movies with fighting in it, it felt very much like one after another attacks you.
Like that trope. Except for Scud, where he had like 5
he didn't fight any of them off.
Reapers come at him.
So Donnie Yen, who plays Snowman, was one of the fight choreographers, and it's hard to not have the one after the other when you have Wesley Snipes in here. Like, I'm going to be the badass. So I need to kill 10 or 20 guys. They have to attack you one after the, especially when he's killing them with his bare hands. Like, he doesn't even have a sword because Reinhardt has a sword. So like, there's not really a way to work around that. I think we should start. We've already talked about the first blood bank scene. I do like the way these movies are couched with like sort of a beginning and ending scene like that. I always like enjoy that part. So like this one leading into the movie, and then the way it ties into the end when he gets the guy at the end in the like the fucking spank bank room with the like he in London.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I enjoy those.
I think I forgot about you.
So he is on this. We get this recap after that first scene where he's like, I'm looking for Whistler. I've been looking for him for 2 years. And we join the story right when he finds him, basically. I thought it was funny. He's like beating the shit out of these guys and they all jump out of this window and slide down the stairs to get on their motorcycles. And there's 3 motorcycles. So the first guy gets on his motorcycle and then the second guy starts chasing after the first guy on his motorcycle, like, don't leave me. It's like, just get on the motorcycle. And then the third guy does the exact same thing. And it's like, there's a third motorcycle. What are you doing?
Like, I like how the only exit out of that alley is blocked by Blade's car. And so they all have to turn around. But then Blade gets like next to his car somehow. I think he's chasing them, right? And he like, doesn't he kiss his car? Or he's like, good girl, or something like that.
He does the kissing like that too.
Like that, yeah. And I just was just, and the car, you think that establishes, that would be so cool too. Everyone's dead and all Blade has is the car, right? And he like treats it like an extension of himself. But then that's the only scene we really get that with that car. nothing mm-hmm. else, like, that car never comes up. And that could have been really, it's like the car that Scud has been working on or whatever. But like, how cool would have been for it to have been like all pimped out with like stake throwers and like machine guns coming out of the hood? Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah. Why are you trying to rewrite this bad movie?
Oh, what about like all the other vampires who have no problems just jumping down? And but that one guy who like burns his hands coming down the fire escape?
Scared of heights.
I was wondering about that too. I'm like, did Blade do something to the fire escape? Why is this one guy having problems with it? But I don't know.
Apparently, Matthew, you don't know the rules of vampire killing. It's garlic, stakes to the heart, and fire escapes burning your hand if you come down them.
That's
too fast.
It. Might I did forget about that one.
It's a very high class.
Oh, that'd be
a very
cool.
High class one. The ladder was made of silver. So he finds Whistler. And instead of killing him, decides he's going to take him home. And as you said, he already saves him. So the vampires break in, right? And at first you're like, oh, this is supposed to, they break in right after Whistler. So they followed Whistler. But like, I'd say a little bit into the movie, right when the main vampire's like, I have someone on the inside. I was like, oh, it's Scud. And I was like, oh, and that's how the vampires found Blade. And then at the end, Scud's like, do you think I let them in? Or you think they broke into my systems? No, I let them in.
Yeah. The other part of like kind of knowing a suspicion on Norman Reedus is he's literally like the snake in the garden. He's behind Blade and he's whispering to him and he's like, you should just kill Whistler. Like, there's no point of having him around. You should just kill him. And it's like, what a weird stance to take on a guy you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think he said that he's like, he talks about him all the time and he knows he's like hung up on it. And it's also, it's totally against Blade's like ethic and ethos to like save a vampire, right? Yeah. Like the only other time he does it is Nyssa, which is kind of, that's the scene where you're like, oh, he's sort of in love with her when he, instead of killing her, he lets her eat him so that she can live. So the other funny thing too, the another like telegraph moment, those vampires break in, they're fighting Blade. I was like, oh, they're not even trying to kill anybody right here. And it's like, oh, so they're like, this is the, you know, this is, they're about to make an offer to him, or like, these are not the bad guys. Right. And so that's kind of where it takes off. He goes to the main vampire castle. And this is what I want to talk about. Yeah. The geography of this movie makes no sense to me. So Nomak is killing people at a Prague blood bank. And then he's back in, is this LA? I thought it was LA in the first movie. I have no idea where we are.
No idea.
But Nomak brought himself and every one of these Reapers to LA, New York, wherever we're supposed to be right now. Like, why is this centrally located right all in the same city?
That's the thing about Blade in general that confuses me a lot. I'm not really into Blade comics, but it's just the fact that
you and think this about movie Blade isn't going to get you Marvel. There.
Yeah, yeah. You think about Blade being in Marvel. I have the same problem with like X-Men: The Mutants. Vampires should be brought up a lot. Like every weekend, Spider-Man should be fighting a vampire. If these guys are like controlling everything, as these movies like to say.
Well, like in the first three phases of the MCU, you had little hints of like things happening elsewhere in the world, where like Black Widow will pop up onto a screen and she's like, "There's trouble in Africa off the coast," and you're like, "Oh, that's Wakanda." Like they're mentioning it. It's like tremors in the Atlantic Ocean. Oh, that's where Namor lives. Like they put little bits of things in here. But if like you said, if you're gonna go and you're gonna be like, "Oh, vampires exist wildly known in this world," then why is Tony Stark not like, oh, that's my vampire defense system? You know, any of those motherfuckers come around, I got them. But
my
none of that.
Solar powered suit.
My solar powered suit. Exactly. But we have none of that. So it is kind of weird. And also, like all DC Marvel movies that have come before the MCU, everything is very separated in its own world. And so Blade not having, And I think that's the thing with this movie too, is that it feels alone in the grand scheme of things. You have no cops or detective side story in this that is like investigating all these deaths. You're like, well, I guess no one gives a shit except Blade in this world, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a movie that almost feels ashamed to be a Marvel property because it came out 2002, same year as the original Spider-Man movie, and no Marvel logo on it. I thought, like, I don't know if this came out like a couple months before or after Spider-Man, but I feel like it'd be such a smart marketing scheme to be like, yeah, we're Marvel too. Like Spider-Man was the biggest box office weekend ever at the time. Like, wouldn't they want to cash in on that? But then you don't really see it until the credits where it's just like, yeah, based off Marvel comics, whatever.
Well, also, what year did Daredevil, Ben Affleck's Daredevil, come into play? Because it was right around this time too, you know?
Yeah.
I think Marvel was probably selling the rights to make these, right? So some other studio was making it at the time. So it's like,
yeah.
Oh, for
whatever,
Blade?
Whatever deal they made. Definitely. So I did hear that David S. Goyer, when he originally wrote this, wanted the main bad guy to be Morbius, but they wanted to make a standalone, which we all know how that turned out.
I don't know what you're talking about, David. I mean, it's the two most, you know, famous MCU villains, Deacon Frost, everyone knows him, and
everyone,
and a Reaper guy. Come on,
Reaper.
That's your new go-to joke. You've done it twice so far. I don't know what you're talking about, and then say a thing that's like the opposite of reality.
It's called comedy. You should look it up.
It's the one comedy. It's just that joke. One of my favorite jokes in this movie, though, is so Carol Roden, who plays the main bad guy in Hellboy, he comes in. He's like, oh, you must be you're not a vampire. You're a human. He's like, close. I'm a lawyer.
Oh, that was great.
That was also my favorite joke.
His name in this is Coonan, which, by the way, following people's names in this movie is like fucking pointless to me. Like, I had to look it up afterwards, but he apparently, most of his lines were dubbed because people found his accent too hard to follow. And I was like, I've heard him in so many movies. Like, it's not hard to understand him at all. I don't know if maybe he got better like in Hellboy and then other movies I've seen since then, but it was like such an obvious dubbing on his lines, like in certain parts of the movie.
I think the only reason I remember Scud's name is because Whistler called him like Scat or something.
Yeah. Like, I don't think he called him Scat.
Well, what did he call him then?
Scuzz.
Oh, whatever. Okay. So, and he's like, no, man, it's not Scuzz. It's Scud with a D. And I was like, well, now you always are never going to forget that name.
So this is where they come together and they're like, hey, we need your help to kill this vampire that kills vampires. And he's like, why would I do that? It's like, oh, because he's eventually going to kill humans, which I guess turns out to not be true. Like, Blade's motivation in killing him in the end, I was like, it only must be because he is in love with Nyssa. Like, otherwise it's like, or maybe he's just like, I just got to kill him. Like, he could go super villain on us. But like, Blade joining this, and Whistler's like, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, oh, you know, we're gonna do it for now. Like, we gotta have this happen. And I do love when they're on the helicopter and she's like, oh, I just thought it would have been harder to convince him to come. And then he just shows that he's got like a shit ton of fucking explosives, like to kill everybody in the nearby area if they like,
yep,
if they're gonna try and kill him.
The way that the equipment is sprawled out, like, okay, two really cool parts about this movie is when we're introduced to the vampire team that was training and training and training to kill Blade, and then one of them being Ron Perlman. I was like, fuck yeah, that's awesome. But the whole interaction, all the other characters are pretty like just one-offs or whatever, but the interaction between Ron Perlman and Blade and Wesley Snipes is gold. Like, the only part that I felt like was actually well written was anything that came out of their mouths to each other. But especially when he sticks the thing on the back of Ron Perlman's head and he's like, that's a bomb rigged to explode if you fucking look at me lopsided. And he's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. When Ron Perlman showed up, my little Hellboy loving heart was so happy. And I was just like, oh my gosh, it's him. Like, I was just so excited. And the first line out of his mouth, me and the guys were wondering, can you blush? I'm like, is that racist, Ron Perlman? Are you, is this going to be you? Let's not do this.
Ron Perlman just wrote his own lines for this movie. Like,
well, apparently...
No, they made my boy racist.
Apparently, he is supposed to be a Nazi, like a neo-Nazi.
I figured. But that also, that line doesn't make sense. Why would he be racist? One of his vampire dudes is black. One of the guys in his crew is black. Why is he racist?
I didn't take it as a racist thing. I never do because I'm
white. It is.
But no, I took it as because vampires don't have any blood circulating through their system, so they can't blush. But then
it's like 100% a racist thing. Snipes apparently had someone say that to him in real life, and he added it in the movie.
But can you look at it at my point of view?
Listen, quit white-splaining the fucking thing. I just told you what it is. Back off.
But it could have been taken both ways. Sure, it could be a racist thing. Okay, whatever. But I'm not racist, so I don't know. And
maybe Reinhardt keeps the black vampire around so he can be the like, oh, I have a black friend.
I have black vampire friends. Like, it's I'm a black dude, like, guys, you understand?
He's cool when I say it. Like,
no, but the other thing could be because vampires don't have a blood system, they physically can't blush. So since he's half and half, maybe he was just curious.
No, yeah, we understood what you're trying to say in the beginning. You're just wrong.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just think he's racist. I don't. And then also, like, after that, what's Blake call? He calls him like Adolf. I'm like, okay, that was kind of the cherry on top.
Yeah, I think.
Well, see, the other way that could have been taken is, you know, that's just a common name, and
Hitler was a vampire.
He knows he's German. Yeah, I get it. So let's go to the first club scene, which this is when they're going to the club. I'm like, how the fuck do they know this is where to go?
Yeah.
And it's in this same town. This dude was in Prague. Lucky, how did he make it over here? Like, there's no any explanation whatsoever of how they know where to go would have been helpful.
It's a huge plot device, like convenience trap, because they're like, well, if he was going to go anywhere, where would he go? And they're like, well, there's this nightclub that's full of vampires, would be a great feeding ground for him. But I am sure there are tons. Exactly.
In Blade One, we learned there are tons of places like that worldwide. It's like a network. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense the only reason it does, and I don't want to give the writer too much credit for this, although, like, he's written other stuff that's good, is that the main guy with Nomak is eventually coming back to get to his father. So the fact that he would end up in the same city as his father makes sense, because that's what he wants.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that he keeps getting caught, because the other thing is they get caught in the sewer system. I'm sure there's a lot of sewers in this town, so they just end up finding the right one right away. I mean, even with the pheromones, what are these, like, sharks? They smell the pheromones, like, that far away. So, I don't know. It is, like you said, it's a lot of plot convenience. I think the action in this first club scene is good. It's really just to establish, like, how powerful these vampires are. And one thing it points out, too, is, like, the fact that this probably isn't evolution. It's more like they've been, like, scientifically bred to, like, be able to withstand garlic and silver and, you know, well, first, be, like, super strong.
First, isn't it, like, they determine there's some sort of parasite enhancement living in them?
Well, that's what they... I think that might be what they said in the beginning, but it's, like, it's at like the end disease. You find out... Yeah, at the end you find out it's, like, bred. They're bred that way.
I understand that. I thought the parasite was the added factor into the breeding. But maybe I was wrong in looking at that.
I don't remember that.
I'm not a vampire scientist.
Yeah. My problem with this club scene is in the first Blade, when Blade steps into the club, everything like stops and all the vampires look at him and they're like, holy shit, it's Blade. This time, he's just walking around. People do not care that this is Blade. He's supposed to be this, like, world-renowned, scary vampire killer. And he's just mucking about here. This time they don't care.
So not only is that a huge problem, Matthew, in this movie, the other problem is that now there's a hierarchy in vampires where you're a pureblood or like a turn, mm-hmm. right? And so the purebloods, as it was explained to me, is when a vampire mommy and a daddy love each other very much.
Oh, what do?
They have a baby vampire, and that's apparently a pureblood. And it doesn't matter if the mommy or daddy vampire were turned. If they were turned or if they were pureblood, the baby, it doesn't matter. The baby's pureblood, which is a weird thing, right? Because if they view turned vampires as a lower class of vampires, then that baby would immediately be like a higher class of vampire than its parents.
I like how you're explaining that the vampires, the pureblood vampires, aren't bigoted enough to the other vampires, that there needs to be more racism amongst the vampires. It's like, you counting these as pureblood? This fucking mudblood over here you're saying is pure? Get out of here.
It doesn't even help that half of them are Nazis.
So, yeah, by the way, I think one of the explanations for why they may not recognize Blade is because the one guy, Priest, says, we should just kill all these fucking people. They're all turned anyway. They may not know who Blade is because they're all kind of new, fresher vampires, right? Whereas like purebloods are going to know who he is.
That's what I'm saying.
They've been dealing with him for forever.
That was my thought about it too. But also, it's such a weird scenario because they're like, hey, and they tell Blade this. They like, when you go in here, you're going to see all sorts of nasty ass shit. And we do. They turn the room around and we see all sorts of weird spine curdling things, like literal spine curling things. And he was like, you got to keep cool. You can't go around killing everyone. But even when they run into the Reapers and they start killing the Reapers, everyone else seemed pretty chill.
They start running.
Eventually. But they're... Yeah. Guns were being thrown out and knives were being drawn and everyone was still like, this is normal.
Wait, there was a vampire who was snorting blood cocaine?
Yeah, I respect that.
Yeah, maybe that's like, it's like, I don't know, ground up bone of was mixed with blood. I don't know what that is. Or maybe it's just cocaine.
It was just cocaine.
So this is the scene where we get introduced to the jaw opening up sideways and... We get the classic like zombie scene where a dude gets bit and you know he's going to turn, but like he doesn't tell anyone and he just covers it up.
That guy.
Yeah. So they make it through the scene. Priest dies and they go back and Blade's like, all right, we got to attack him during the day because that's our only chance. So we're going out at daytime. One of my favorite lines too, also a Ron Perlman where he's like, she's like, yeah, you need to spray these pheromones on you. And he's like, we're going to put some suck puppies nut juice all over ourselves and just travel around in the daytime. I was like, that's a good line.
That was a good line.
I have to give credit where credit's due is Guillermo del Toro and his effects and his practical effects are so good. And the way that he mixes digital with practical effects, the way they open up their jaws, I thought was pretty much as good as anything we come up with in modern day.
I thought that looked very well done, especially for the time. And I love the creature design in this too. Like, I mean, that's obviously Del Toro's biggest strength in most of, if any, of his movies. But yeah, I really enjoyed the Reaper's design. They're a little like Nosferatu. Like, I like the older style vampire, very pale. They're not as sexy as these other vampires. And then, like, the fact that it has, like, this predator mouth and my favorite scene in this whole thing is when they, like, dissect it. That was my favorite scene in this whole movie.
Because it's all practical.
It looks great.
Well, they have the tooth that the neurotoxin comes out of.
Yeah.
And then they find out that, like, the heart can only be stabbed from the side, which I love in the end. Like, Blade paid attention in science class, so that's how he was able to survive.
Yeah.
The whole thing I think was probably better than most of the stuff that we see today as far as CGI and practical effects go. But a thing that was just cool is the guy who was bit who's trying to cover it up has like this mallet weapon, and he hits the side of a Reaper's head and it breaks his neck, and he pops it back. And the way that is like demonstrated, I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, I thought that that effect was pulled off well. To go on the opposite end, some of the effects when they decide that they don't want to choreograph fights anymore and they just want to animate it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Matthew.
I don't think that looks too great. It looks kind of like a Pixar movie, like just got slipped in for a minute.
You're talking about where characters they're like
feel very weightless.
Yeah, weightless. They're all like jumping around, walking, like climbing on walls, and it just feels very like there's no gravity to the situation. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, it's and then it will like it's the fact that it's not quick either. Like it's long shots, and they think they're cool, and they're I'm not a fan of them.
No, I agree. Those did not age well. But if you look at the ones that do age well, they are mixed with practical effects. Like they, like for the mouths, I think the only thing that's CGI for the mouths are is the connection between the mouths and the actual human faces, where they use digital imaging to like kind of hide the seams of the makeup. But everything else is practical. But the thing with the bodies jumping around everywhere is that it's all CGI. So, you know, and I bet it looked good in 2002. I bet it did. I bet people didn't have a problem with it. But now that we're looking back on it 20 years later, we're like, that was shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we get to this hunt, this daytime hunt, but it's downstairs in the sewer. So it still looks like it's nighttime. And
Pearlman, so convenient.
Yeah, right. Pearlman and Chupa, they turn on Whistler, and Whistler immediately starts like releasing these pheromones, so you know what's going to happen there. Chupa is from Fast and the Furious 1. He's the guy that's also in love with Paul Walker's girl. And then I was like, after this movie ended, I was like, what the fuck happened to Donnie Yen? Like, I don't remember what happened to him at all. And I guess, so the big light hammer guy ate him.
Yep.
I did not know who that's who he was eating. Like, I don't know if I just wasn't paying attention enough.
One of the coolest moments was given to a character that we know little to nothing about was the guy's girl. I think the only girl on the team.
Verlaine. Nisa's another girl.
Well, not Nisa. Obviously Nisa, but like from the pack.
She's in the pack.
Nisa?
There's two of them.
But Nisa's like the leader of the look, I'm not gonna go with you. But the way she like gets him to go up to the sewer and open the thing, and she's like, I'm gonna die, but it's almost like an I can't live without you and you gotta go sort of thing.
Yeah.
That was great. I was like, man, what a thing to give a character that had no lines in this movie.
Yeah, her death was kind of cool. The whole like just open the manhole cover, sacrifice yourself to kill one of the Reapers. And then you find out like a minute later that there's like 1,000 of those guys down there. It's
what's insane. Funny too, is that what establishes that is that the manhole covers and it's daylight outside and it's coming down. Like you can see the sunlight coming down from the sewers. So when Ron Perlman is running through and you have those like bits of light coming down,
yeah,
it hurts him. He's like trying to run away from the Reapers, but he's like also dodging like the sunlight thing.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like in the first Blade, when they are hit by sunlight, don't they like pop? Aren't they like the one guy that they take to the sunrise, doesn't he like explode kind of deal? Now they kind of like, dissolve.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a little bit of time, though, like for the sun to get them. So, like, the Ron Perlman burning his hand and stuff, I thought was funny. But I think the practical effects are definitely, like, he wanted to put his own spin a little bit on it for this one. So, Blade saves everybody, but then you have Ron Perlman kind of, like, basically twice trying to set him up to have him killed. And then when all the guys show up, the lawyer shows up with all the goons and they capture Blade. Like, thinking back now, it's like Ron Perlman just had to try to get you killed, but they want, this whole thing seems to have been to get your blood so that they can walk during the day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I don't understand that. Like, they wanted him to kill all the Reapers besides the main one, or maybe they thought he killed all the... Why are all the Reapers so centrally located in this one area? Like, shouldn't they spread out? I guess because they're like, they describe them as crack addicts, so it's like they need their leader to show them where to go, but I guess they just assumed he killed everyone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like the way they escalate the stakes in this movie from the first, of like, the first one's like, we gotta hunt vampires. What's worse than a vampire? A crackhead vampire, and that's what we're doing here. It's fun. I don't even know
what they face against fucking in Trinity.
Triple H.
Is it Dracula? You gotta do Dracula in the third
Blade. It's legitimately Triple H. He's in the third one. He's a vampire.
What, are you kidding me? I thought you were joking.
But is he like Dracula?
No, he's actually just a henchman. But yeah, Triple H is in the third one. Yeah. I kind of don't remember. I think the internal fight of Blade is really what he's focusing on in that one. But then there's also another fight. He joins up with some other vampire hunters.
It is Dracula.
Good. Jessica Biel and Ryan Reynolds.
Here we go.
Yeah,
that.
Don't ruin it for yourself, Alon.
Just seems weird.
The only thing that I'm not looking at.
A huge fan of these first two, but Blade Trinity, that just sounds like a different beast that I'm not ready for.
It goes in a different direction. It does not follow in the footsteps of Blade 2 at all. Like, you can watch. That's why, like, I've, for the longest time, I'd see Blade 1 and Blade 3, and it kind of, like, they kind of form together well with, like, completely skipping over Blade 2. Like, I don't. It's almost like it just starts from Blade 1. Though. Yeah. I mean, we're not done, but I, like, still enjoy this movie, even though, like, some bad stuff in it, some stuff that just doesn't hold up well, or maybe it didn't work at the time. Who knows?
Do you, at Matthew, when you were watching the first Blade, did you recognize the guy who played Deacon Frost, Stephen Dorff?
I did not.
So, me neither. I kind of was like, oh, he's a nobody playing such a villain against iconic Wesley Snipes. But apparently, according to David, he's a big 90s guy, and I just wasn't aware of it.
Oh, what else is he in?
David?
I mean, this is the main thing for me. What's that? Deuces Wild was another big one. He's a leader of a gang. Frankie Muniz is in that gang, which is funny, like, I think I talked about this on the Blade episode, but that movie's not very good, but there's this one scene. There's a fight scene where fucking Stephen Dorff comes in at the very end with brass knuckles and just beats the shit out of everyone. The only problem is it's shot at night, so you can't really see any of it.
Oh my gosh.
Otherwise it would have been really badass. It's still kind of badass, but like, I couldn't see it that well. Stephen Dorff, like, people know who Stephen Dorff is. He was also in a Sofia Coppola movie somewhere with Elle Fanning. He's kind of now gotten to the point where he thinks he's like an auteur type actor, and like, so he like shits on a lot of other Marvel movies and stuff like that. But he's doing a lot of direct to streaming, what you would have called direct to DVD type stuff back in the day. So,
yeah. I just think bringing Stephen Dorff into the conversation, and then the guy who plays the main Reaper guy in this, which I also don't know him in anything. Looking who plays Count Dracula in Trinity is Dominic Purcell, who I only know from Prison Break.
Dominic Purcell, I forgot. Yeah, he's fucking awesome.
So, but they're not really big A-lister actors, and it's kind of weird having your main villain, your main hero being Wesley Snipes, and then your villains being these like B actors that maybe you heard of or maybe not. I just feel like if you're gonna have someone like Wesley Snipes, you should have someone big name to be the villain.
Yeah, the villain Deacon Frost in the first movie was so much better than the main guy. I don't even know the character's name or the actor's name in this one, but like, I don't know. Like, in Deacon Frost, I'm not gonna like pretend he's like Darth Vader or anything, but he's like, he had some memorable moments and stuff, and like, I like the scene where he gets cut in half and the awful CGI blood pulls him back in. Like, that's cool. And he has the fun moments where I love finding out that he holds up London Tipton from Suite Life at the park. That's great. But yeah, just in this movie, the villains just aren't memorable. And I think that is also a symptom of the design, where I do like the more Nosferatu vampire-ish vibe, but they all kind of look the same. So a lot of the time I was like, I don't know which villain this is right now. And then you meet the head of the vampires who looks the exact same as the Reapers.
Which is how you know, it's once again telegraphing that you know he's the main bad guy. Like, he's the actual evil in this story. Let's get... Let's get back to it, Alon. You've diverted us too long for a movie where nothing happens. We've been talking about it for entirely too long. So they bring Blade back, and they're like, "Yeah, this is our grand plan. We're gonna steal your blood." And they strip Blade of... this part is just fucking farcical to me. They strip Blade of all his weapons, except for the button he can press to blow up Ron Perlman's head. He's like, "I'm gonna fucking kill you." And then it doesn't work, and this is Scud's big reveal.
I love
this. And then he's like, "Oh, you know what? The button does actually work." And then he kills Scud. But like, what was his plan after that? It would have been more beneficial to you to kill Ron Perlman.
I was going to say that. That's what makes no sense.
Both of them as they're both holding it.
No, but you couldn't get the one line in. You couldn't get where he's like, "I always suspected you." You couldn't get that in. And also, I love that scene, because that means that he fake pressed the button to be like, "Oh shit, it doesn't work." And then he had his suspicions on Scud, but then it was really revealed when Scud thought he had the upper hand. And the fucking shit-eating grin, he's like, "Oh, I went behind your back and fixed it." And then he blew him up. It was beautiful to me. Best part of the movie.
The fact that earlier they say that the bomb will explode if anyone tampers with it. Why didn't it blow up when Ron Perlman pulled it off his head? It should have blown up then.
Maybe that's the part he didn't fix.
Nah, maybe. Maybe he kept that part broke because he's like, "It's just going to be really cool.
It's just going to be really cool."
And it's like, who's going to be easier for you to kill, Blade? The vampire who's been training the last 2 years specifically to kill you, or just tech guy?
Well,
you decide tech guy.
Apparently both, Matt, because after this scene, Ron Perlman dies almost immediately.
Yeah, kind of lame death.
Well, I mean, a lot of stuff happens, right? Like, Whistler has to escape, and then he kills the lawyer. He uses so many fucking bullets on that lawyer. It seemed unnecessary.
Overkill. I mean, he was a lawyer. So.
Guillermo del Toro has a thing against lawyers. I don't really... It's kind of, you know, a little much. I do love that when the lawyer is talking to Blade, and he's like, "Nomak wants revenge." He's like, "Well, good thing he doesn't know where we are." And he's like... he does now. And you just see him coming through and tearing through everybody, climbing the walls to get to his dad.
It's because of the ring, right?
Yeah. So he's like the Green Lantern.
No. Well, then, because then the Green Lantern joins Blade Trinity. Perfect. No, but there's a tracker in the ring.
Oh, no, he does. He actually does. That's awful.
I assume there's a tracker in the ring, but they don't tell us that.
They don't tell us that, but he looks at the ring and he goes, "They do now." And then they go shoot back at the ring. And it's like, I guess that's what they're trying to say.
I almost feel
like it's one of those things that was never written. But then looking back on the script, they're like, "Oh, shit, what does that even mean?" And they're like, "Editor, can you cut it in a way where maybe we can think of it as it being the ring?" And then he's like, "Mm-hmm. I'll just cut back to the ring." And they're like, "Yeah, sounds good."
Yeah. So Whistler,
I have a lot of issues with the ending.
Whistler has to get him to this blood pool, basically. And upon entering the blood pool, it instantaneously, like, completely revives him, to where he then crushes like 20 dudes' heads. And then I love the Ron Perlman death is pretty sweet, where he hits the sword out of his hand and then just fucking cuts him in half. So cool.
That was cool.
I feel like that scene is somewhere in my, like, back of the mind childhood trauma where like I saw just that scene playing on cable.
I recognized it too, like Blade coming out of the blood. And like the Ron Perlman talking, I recognize too. It's like it almost feels like a fucking scene that he's also done as Hellboy. Like the Ron Perlman talking, the way he shot, like the way the camera kind of looks up at him to make him look larger than life. I was like, it's definitely, I don't know, definitely like was something I thought I had seen before, which I have never seen this movie, but I may have seen like a clip from. Like definitely probably some lines from Blade are taken from this movie in like real clips and whatever.
For a guy who's named Blade, quite honestly, he doesn't use a blade that much in this movie.
Really upset they didn't give him two blades in this. Like, here's a
and then in Trinity, he has three blades.
Yeah, he could be like Zoro from One Piece. Keep one in his mouth. That'd be great.
That's how math works. Yeah. Mahershala Ali is gonna have seven.
Seven blades.
So She traps her father, and then, the dude comes in and just immediately. He's obviously gonna kill him, but I love the way the father tries to trick him, and then Nomak's just like, "I believe you, but why are you trembling, father?" And then kills him. Doesn't turn him. Just like puts the toxin in him to just kill him. It's good.
Mm-hmm. There. Before that, there's just two little things that I just want to talk about. One is Whistler throwing the glasses to Blade as Blade catches them, puts them on, which happened in the first one. And I'm just thinking like it needs to happen in every Blade. Like, not just like, would I be disappointed if I don't see it in Trinity? Yes. But I'm even talking about like Mahershala Ali needs to grab a pair of sunglasses in midair, put them on, strike a pose, or it's not Blade. Okay.
Nope.
The second one is a great Whistler moment is him shooting all the rest of the embryos and like ending that cycle. I thought it was a great like tying of loose ends sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, David. Go back to your big fight scene. I'm sorry.
I mean, the fight scene happens. It's not really like, you know, it's really all I had is that it happens.
Well, he kills Nissa.
Why does Nissa like let him do that? Why is she like, come on, do this. Come turn me.
I think she feels guilty. I think she feels guilty of her father's doings. And she's like, wow, he's trying so hard to like do this bloodline thing. Like, I can't let it go on with me. That's how I took it.
Yeah, it was just weird. To me, it felt like she was trying to buy Blade time. And then like right when her brother bites into her, she looks up and sees Blade and was like, oh shit, I thought you were going to be longer. And like, I really didn't have to do this. And now I got to die.
It seems to me that they probably planned on a sequel. They planned on the trilogy and they're like, and we don't really have any plans for Nissa to be in the next one. We can't actually have him like marry a vampire. It sort of goes against who he is. So
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like she needs... It sounds like she needs a shot of whatever Whistler's on and she'll be a-okay. I wonder if that'll ever come back in the third one. Like, oh, by the way, Whistler is still a fucking vampire.
I can't remember if he's in the third one, to be honest with you.
Oh, my gosh. They retconned it again. Actually, he did kill himself in the first one. Blade 2 didn't happen. They're just going to go back and forth the whole time. Did Rian Johnson direct this one, this middle one? Then we're going to get a Rise of Skywalker and Trinity. Actually, all of that was wrong.
The thing is I think his daughter comes into the third one, and that's the plot point for that. But
Blades?
No, Whistler's. Oh,
a Whistler's daughter.
Yeah. Jessica Biel, I think.
Yeah. And man, I don't know. I don't know about that, but I do like Nisa's death scene where he like carries her out into the sun. She wants to look at the sunrise. So they're on there and she like evaporates in his arms, which is another horribly done CGI thing.
I thought it looked pretty beautiful though.
I know we did an episode of this, so I don't know if you've seen this movie, Matthew, but David, do you remember 30 Days of Night?
Yeah.
You remember it's kind of a similar scene where he gets bit and he kind of dies as the sun rises?
Okay.
It reminded me of that a lot.
Yeah, I don't remember that movie too well. There's parts of it I remember.
So he gets bit. He's turning. All the other vampires are dead. Spoiler.
I don't need you to describe it to me. Why do you like you describing? You think you're going to describe it in a way that's going to be like, oh, yes, that was beautiful.
But he doesn't want to turn into a killer, so he does the self-sacrificial thing. So
beautiful. I don't even know who you're talking about, but you're going to ruin a movie for other people that haven't seen it. If you listen to this episode, you have to listen to all 200 previous ones and watch all corresponding
100%.
Movies.
100%.
Yeah. If you want to dive deep into the David and Alon lore, see canon. Where, the canon, Matthew's origin story is in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's very
I shot cool. myself in my first episode and now I'm back.
And then it ends with a little, it's almost a stinger, but I don't think it happens. Maybe it does happen after. I don't remember. Anyway, basically he finds that guy Rush in a jerk off stand. And he's like, you thought I forgot about you, which is like, it just would have been funny if he danced a little, you know, but, and that's how the movie ends.
If he was shirtless, if when he flicked the light on, he put the coin in, Wesley Snipes was just shirtless. He's like, thought I forgot about you.
With nipple tassels. there's a couple things I wanted to add. So for the character of Nyssa, Asia Argento, Christiana Loken, and Rhona Mitra were considered. Rhona Mitra would have been good. Would have been nice.
I don't think I know any of those names you just said.
Fucking look them up. I don't care. Rhona Mitra was, she looks a lot like Kate Beckinsale. That's the best I can do. But she's been in a lot of, like, this type of movies. What's that one movie? Doomsday. She was in Doomsday. It's kind of like one of her bigger things where she did.
Okay.
And then the last thing, this would have been amazing. Originally, they were supposed to be a vampire pimp in the first club scene that was going to be played by Michael Jackson. But unfortunately, he couldn't do it. Oh, that would have
been great.
And then the guy they had to do it, like, that scene eventually got cut. But if Michael Jackson's the vampire pimp, that scene's making it in the movie. So that's unfortunate.
That
would have
been perfect.
Yeah. That, like, that raises this by at least half a star. Because we're always just thinking back, like, but fucking Michael Jackson vampire pimp.
So what's everyone's final thought? Matthew, what's your final thought of this film?
I think going back and think about like Hellboy as compared to this, and I said in that movie that I really enjoyed the action, but I really enjoyed what Del Toro can do to the monster and humanizing the monster. Mm-hmm. I kept waiting for a moment like that in Blade. And just the first movie's a lot of action and one-liners, and then I got to the sequel, and I was like, all right, Del Toro's in the helm now. We're going to really find out who this Blade guy is. He's going to have wants, desires, dislikes. No, we don't get any of that. I don't need him saving cats out of trees or stalking his ex or whatever, but something, like, we're two movies in, I don't know anything about this Blade guy except he just likes to pump his fist and kill vampires. So I was really disappointed in this movie.
I see where you're coming from. I think we get a little bit of that in the first one. We get more of that in the first one than the second one. Definitely,
which is shocking.
We get a bit of that with his mom, his interaction with his mom. And then I think in the second one, the only time we get that is in the beginning with Whistler.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we get that in the first one with Whistler's death. But now that scene kind of gets retroactively destroyed. So, yeah, I don't know. I was just... And then everyone tells me, like, oh, the Blade... First two Blade movies are great. Like, they're in that kind of dawn of the superhero renaissance. And I don't like this movie. I'm really sad to say it, but I love a lot of the action sequence, the practical effects. I like the creature design, but just when it comes to, like, some of the CGI is bad. The writing I don't think is there. The characters are all super half baked, but Ron Perlman's like fantastic. I could watch him all day. So, like, for every one step forward, I feel like there's two steps back for this one for me. So it's a little lower on my end.
Yeah, I love the first one. And I like the third one is kind of a, it's like, it's not so bad it's good, but it's like, it's bad but still enjoyable to me. I haven't seen it in forever. This one, like, the fighting isn't good enough for how bad the script is.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make up for it for me. But it's still like, I had low expectations, so it was still fine to me. Like, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, I guess. Like, the parts I didn't think I was going to like were, like, the creatures and stuff. But then when you know it's a Del Toro movie and you come into it, you're like, all right, well, that shit was good. But, like, I don't know. Overall, I've seen a lot worse movies. That's my final take.
I definitely like the first one better. And I'm also disappointed in that because I really wanted to like the second one. And not because usually sequels have a, you know, notorious... being better than the original. They don't, except for a few, but I was hoping that there were some story mistakes or some just offbeats that the first one had that I was hoping the second one would correct. And it doesn't. And somehow it doubles down on the faults of the first one, and doesn't do enough doubling down on the good of the first one to, like, equalize it out to be at least as good as the first one. And then I hear, like, a lot of people really like this movie, so I apologize to them for having bad taste. But the disappointment is disappointing for me. So I think thank you. I think this is one of the first movies where we all come out of it where we're not that huge fans of.
I don't know. I'm not going to think back.
You never do. Well, thanks for listening to another episode of I Finally Watched. I'm Alon.
I'm Matthew.
And this is David. And we all three finally watched Blade 2.